Dads and ladies, welcome to the Junior Classics.
Hi there, I'm Sir Bradley Hassey, a teller of borrowed tales. Join me as I share stories of courage, adventure, and wonder. But don't take my word for it. You can find out for yourself on today's Junior Classic. Hello, everybody. I am Sir Bradley Hassey, guardian of the written word and your guide through the Junior Classics. Our mission is to safeguard the classics and inspire children to a love of good reading and a real and lasting interest in Western literature and history. If this is your first time listening, thank you for joining us. And a very special thank you to my loyal listeners, the Bears, the Unauthorized, my local region listeners who tune in each and every episode, and especially my Patreon supporters who help keep the show going and growing. If you like what we are doing and you want more of it, consider supporting me on Patreon for $5 a month. You can also write me a letter at P.O. Box 1153, Crown Point, Indiana, 46308. I would love to get letters from you guys. Tell me the lost and found words that you like, what stories you like and why. Send me an art project about any story. I'll open it up and we will discuss. Now, continuing on with our current series, Tales from Europe, we have another Polish tale called The Glass Mountain, and this one is a classic. But first,
lost and found words!
Pay close attention to these words and their meanings and try and spot them during the show. Our first word today is steed. A steed is a riding horse. And I think the word steed is usually used with medieval terminology of like a knight on a horse. A mighty steed the knight rode on. Our next word is shied. Shied means when a horse moves suddenly from being frightened. I had never heard this word before in my life. Shied. S-H-I-E-D. Our third word is lynx, and that is an animal. A lynx is a wild cat. Did any of you guys know that? Our fourth word is carrion. Carrion is the decaying flesh of dead animals. And vultures, eagles, scavengers, they'll look for carrion to eat. And our last word today is retinue. A retinue is a group of advisors assisting an important person. Another word that's similar to retinue would be entourage or convoy, a bunch of people that are surrounding and advise or help an important person. Now, on to the show. Have you guys ever thought about the purpose behind these myths, legends, and folktales that we read? Perhaps I should have talked about this a long time ago, but these traditional stories, they help explain the history and the important values of a specific group of people. So we've read stories so far from the tales from India. Right now we're on Poland. We've done Spain, England, and all those stories share what's important to those people and explains their past. And within these stories are something called symbols. Now, symbols are things that represent or stand for something else. So let me give you some examples of some symbols in the tales that we've read in the past. Some of those would be witches, roses, birds, and wolves. And there's many more, but those are the ones I picked. Witches often represent the dark or evil side of people. And roses can represent love, beauty, and the heart. Birds, because they can fly, are often messengers. Wolves and foxes and coyotes can represent the devil or tricksters. A jackal would also fall under that. If you remember the Indian tales we read, there was a jackal who was quite the trickster. So, as we read the story today, try to spot symbols, something that might be representing something else. And just to give you a little bit of a hint and head start, pay close attention to anything that is golden, silver, birds, blood, and even numbers. I hope you enjoyed today's story because it's a good one.
The Glass Mountain by Herman R. Kletke.
Once upon a time, there was a glass mountain at the top of which stood a castle made of pure gold. And in front of the castle, there grew an apple tree on which there were golden apples. Anyone who picked an apple gained admittance into the golden castle. And there, in a silver room, sat an enchanted princess of surpassing fairness and beauty. She was as rich, too, as she was beautiful. For the cellars of the castle were full of precious stones, and great chests of the finest gold stood round the walls of all the rooms. Many knights had come from afar to try their luck, but it was in vain they attempted to climb the mountain. In spite of having their horses shod with sharp nails, no one managed to get more than halfway up, and then they all fell back right down to the bottom of the steep, slippery hill. Sometimes they broke an arm, sometimes a leg, and many a brave man had broken his neck even. The beautiful princess sat at her window and watched the bold knights trying to reach her on their splendid horses. The sight of her always gave men fresh courage, and they flocked from the four quarters of the globe to attempt the work of rescuing her. But all in vain, and for 7 years the princess had sat now and waited for someone to scale the glass mountain. A heap of corpses, both of riders and horses, lay round the mountain, and many dying men lay groaning there, unable to go any further with their wounded limbs. The whole neighborhood had the appearance of a vast churchyard. In 3 more days, the 7 years would be at an end, when a knight in golden armor and mounted on a spirited steed was seen making his way toward the fatal hill. Sticking his spurs into his horse, he made a rush at the mountain and got up halfway. Then he calmly turned his horse's head and came down again without a slip or stumble. The following day, he started in the same way. The horse trod on the glass as if it had been level earth, and sparks of fire flew from its hooves. All the other knights gazed in astonishment, for he had almost gained the summit, and in another moment he would have reached the apple tree. But of a sudden, a huge eagle rose up and spread its mighty wings, hitting as it did so the knight's horse in the eye. The beast shied, opened its wide nostrils, and tossed its mane. Then, rearing high up in the air, its hind feet slipped, and it fell with its rider down the steep mountainside. Nothing was left of either of them except their bones, which rattled in the battered golden armor like dry peas in a pod. And now, there was only one more day before the close of the 7 years. Then there arrived on the scene a mere schoolboy, a merry, happy-hearted youth, but at the same time strong and well-grown. He saw how many knights had broken their necks in vain, but undaunted, he approached the steep mountain on foot and began the ascent. For long he had heard his parents speak of the beautiful princess who sat in the golden castle at the top of the glass mountain. He listened to all he heard and determined that he too would try his luck. But first he went to the forest and caught a lynx, and cutting off the creature's sharp claws, he fastened them onto his own hands and feet. Armed with these weapons, he boldly started up the glass mountain. The sun was nearly going down, and the youth had not gotten more than halfway up. He could hardly draw breath, he was so worn out, and his mouth was parched by thirst. A huge black cloud passed over his head, but in vain did he beg and beseech her to let a drop of water fall on him. He opened his mouth, but the black cloud sailed past, and not as much as a drop of dew moistened his lips. His feet were torn and bleeding, and he could only hold on now with his hands. Evening closed in, and he strained his eyes to see if he could behold the top of the mountain. Then he gazed beneath him, and what a sight met his eyes. A yawning abyss, with certain and terrible death at the bottom, reeking with half-decayed bodies of horses and riders. And this had been the end of all the other brave men who, like himself, had attempted the ascent. It was almost pitch dark now, and only the stars lit up the glass mountain. The poor boy still clung on, as if glued to the glass by his blood-stained hands. He made no struggle to get higher, for all his strength had left him. And seeing no hope, he calmly awaited his death. Then all of a sudden, he fell into a deep sleep, and forgetful of his dangerous position, he slumbered sweetly. But all the same, although he slept, he had stuck his sharp claws so firmly into the glass that he was quite safe not to fall. Now, the golden apple tree was guarded by the eagle, which had overthrown the golden knight and his horse. Every night, it flew round the glass mountain, keeping a careful lookout. And no sooner had the moon emerged from the clouds than the bird rose up from the apple tree and, circling round in the air, caught sight of the sleeping youth. Greedy for carrion, and sure that this must be a fresh corpse, the bird swooped down upon the boy. But he was awake now, and perceiving the eagle, he determined by its help to save himself. The eagle dug its sharp claws into the tender flesh of the youth, but he bore the pain without a sound and seized the bird's 2 feet with his hands. The creature in terror lifted him up high, high up into the air, and began to circle round the tower of the castle. The youth held on bravely. He saw the glittering palace, which by the pale rays of the moon looked like a dim lamp, and he saw the high windows, and round one of them a balcony, in which the beautiful princess sat lost in sad thoughts. Then the boy saw that he was close to the apple tree, and drawing a small knife from his belt, he cut off both the eagle's feet. The bird rose up in the air in its agony and vanished into the clouds, and the youth fell onto the broad branches of the apple tree. Then he drew out the claws of the eagle's feet that had remained in his flesh and put the peel of one of the golden apples on the wound, and in one moment it was healed and well again. He pulled several of the beautiful apples and put them in his pocket. Then he entered the castle. The door was guarded by a great dragon, but as soon as he threw an apple at it, the beast vanished. At that same moment, a gate opened, and the youth perceived a courtyard full of flowers and beautiful trees. And on a balcony sat the lovely enchanted princess with her retinue. As soon as she saw the youth, she ran toward him and greeted him as her husband and master. She gave him all her treasures, and the youth became a rich and mighty ruler. But he never returned to the earth, for only the mighty eagle, who had been the guardian of the princess and of the castle, could have carried on his wings the enormous treasure down to the world. But as the eagle had lost its feet, it died, and its body was found in a wood on the glass mountain. One day, when the youth was strolling about the palace garden with the princess his wife, he looked down over the edge of the glass mountain and saw, to his astonishment, a great number of people gathered there. He blew his silver whistle, and the swallow, who acted as messenger in the golden castle, flew past.
"Fly down and ask what the matter is,"
he said to the little bird, who sped off like lightning and soon returned saying,
"Master, the blood of the eagle has restored all the people below to life. All those who have perished on this mountain are awakening up today, as it were from a sleep, and are mounting their horses, and the whole population are gazing on this unheard of wonder with joy and amazement."
great story. Man, I always love it when there's a challenge and the hero rises to the occasion and succeeds in the end after all kinds of obstacles. That was a really cool story. So, I think there was quite a bit of rich symbolism in today's story. And I'm just going to think out loud with you guys, because like I've said many times, I'm learning right along with you. So I'm going to share some of the things that stood out to me and just ask some questions, and I'd love to hear back from you. The first thing that stuck out to me was the golden apples. I'm not sure what the golden apples symbolized, but I'm certain they symbolize something, so that'd be a great bit of homework for you to try to track down. But what was important about the golden apples was that you were not allowed to enter the castle unless you picked a golden apple. And then the other thing that was interesting is the hero defeated a dragon just by throwing a golden apple at it. So a golden apple defeated a dragon. Interesting. I also thought it was interesting how just matter-of-factly it was stated that men flocked from the four corners of the world to climb this mountain and reach the princess. What made a vast number of men attempt this very dangerous task where they were almost certain to be injured or killed? And as I was thinking about it, I think there's a couple reasons. Well, what happened if they climbed the mountain and made it to the castle? Well, they would be able to marry a beautiful, noble princess who would bring that man wealth and power. When the hero married the princess at the end, he was automatically made the ruler of that area. So who would not want to try and achieve those things? And also, there was an opportunity to rescue. I think that's something that pulls on men's heartstrings, is being able to rescue, you know, especially a woman. And this would have been a great deed that if you achieved it, the whole land would know, because so many people had tried and failed. So I think also just having a great challenge to try and overcome would have attracted a lot of men. And I think it'd be a good thing for a man with good intentions to try to achieve this goal and get the beautiful woman to marry and the wealth and the power, because he would use it for good reasons. Several times in these stories, it is not the strongest who succeeds, but often it's the most resourceful, the most witty, the most intelligent. In what ways do you think the hero in our story was resourceful, that he used his mind to accomplish the mission? There's a couple things. Try and think about that. Another thing I was thinking about was eagles. Eagles, or large soaring birds, often swoop in at just the right time in many stories to help the hero from almost certain doom and fly them to safety or save the day. The most obvious example that comes to mind for me is in The Lord of the Rings, when the eagles come in and fly Frodo to the mountain. I really hope I'm getting that right. I haven't read Lord of the Rings in a long time, but I know the eagles basically saved the day. And what was interesting in this story is the eagle did not come to rescue the hero, but he was coming to eat him. Yet the eagle was still the vehicle that helped the hero reach the top and finish the mission. And the eagle was said to be the guardian of the princess and castle. And I was just thinking that even though he wasn't coming to save the day, he was a necessary character, because his sacrifice was necessary to ensure only the best man, the one who could get past the eagle, would make it to the princess. So he was serving the princess, the eagle, even though he was destroyed. And speaking of him being destroyed, did you notice that the blood of the eagle restored all those people to life? All the people that had died restored them to life. And I have to wonder, is this pointing to another person whose blood restored people to life and resulted in unheard wonder, joy, and amazement? Can you think of any other stories about someone's blood healing others? Well, that's all I got for you this week. instead of giving you a lesson from the story, I think I'm going to start just trying to have these more open-ended conversations and get you more thinking about it than just feeding you what I think the story's about. So, until next time, I am Sir Bradley Hasse. Be brave, be loyal, and speak the truth.
Now, for you parents out there, I want you to understand why we are doing this, what we are trying to achieve, and how you can help us. This is a rescue operation to preserve the classics and the wisdom within before it is lost forever. Our goal is to inspire children with a love of good reading by safeguarding and breathing new life into the greatest stories in history and empower you, the parents, with a resource you can trust to enrich your child's mind and spirit. We don't want these stories and the wisdom within to be forgotten, so our children don't have to learn these lessons on their own. The most important thing you can do for us is to spread the message and tell others about these stories and what we are doing. If you want to donate, we would love that as well. My promise is that 100% of donations will go to building the impact and quality of the Junior Classics. If you have feedback and thoughts on how we can do things better, please send an email
to juniorclassicspodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening to the Junior Classics.
Another beautiful piece by Polish composer Frederick Chopin.